Hi, and welcome to another episode of That Vet Life, a podcast created to highlight the people and experiences that inspire, encourage, and challenge the veterinary profession. If you're new around here, I'm your host, Mariah McCauley, a fourth-year student at the Royal Dick School of Veterinary Studies in Edinburgh, Scotland. To point out the obvious, you're listening to a podcast. And though it's nothing new, podcasting has become a very popular medium for the dissemination of ideas and information. But why is that? And why podcasting in the first place? And even more so, how can this be used in veterinary medicine? To dive into this deeper, let me welcome today's guest, a fourth-year student at Mizzou and fellow podcaster, Seth Williams. So welcome to the show, Seth.
Thanks for having me, Mariah. How's it going?
Oh, it's going all right. Scotland is starting to become darker each day and a little bit colder, but in general, vet school's going all right.
Good. Very good. Well, I really appreciate you having me on.
No, it's really exciting. You're actually one of my first real introductions to podcasting, so it is an honor to have you on as a guest today.
Very cool. Thank you.
So to jump right into it, you are a fourth-year student at Mizzou, but that's not really where your story started now, is it?
It is not. I've got a weird story.
Well, and I will let you tell that. So what was your undergrad in then?
So I actually studied music business and entertainment industries. That was my major in college. I went to the University of Miami in Florida. Still a big Hurricanes fan. And to make a very long story short, I entered into college thinking that I wanted to go to medical school. I really liked science and I grew up in the pharmacy industry. My dad's a pharmacist and grandpa and uncle. So that I've come from a long line of that and grew up learning about the pharmacy industry and kind of working there as a technician. So more or less, I liked helping people with their medical things. So really wanted to do the pre-med, you know, biology track, whatever it was in undergrad, but I really loved music too. And that was one of my big passions in high school was playing music. And University of Miami was one of the few schools in the U.S. that allowed you to double major in both music and a major outside the School of Music. So that was one of the big reasons that I decided to go there. So after my first semester, I was just getting beat down with work. Little did I know that not only was the pre-med track very intensive in terms of the studying, which is to no surprise, the music school curriculum was also equally as demanding, just in class all day long, and there really wasn't a whole lot of time to do a lot of studying or extracurriculars outside of that curriculum. So I decided to kind of see about switching gears and went to the career counseling service and took all these career and interest aptitude tests, whatever they call them. And unfortunately, it wasn't all that helpful because essentially what we decided or what those tests found was that I had equal interests in science and medicine, music, and also business. So which all these things I knew about. Now, it really did not help me try to narrow down what I wanted to do. But a lot of my friends that I had met actually in the music school were in this music business program, which is pretty unique at the time to Miami. And it's a very well-renowned program. So I figured that I could hit two birds with one stone there, if you will. So studying music and getting a business degree or a business education kind of with a music industry twist on it was a really good way to go. So I went that route. I believe I switched majors officially in my spring semester of my first year and finished off and graduated with that degree and loved it. I moved back home to St. Louis where I grew up and was fortunate enough to find a job with a small production company and did some event production and event management. Also got into some DJing with internet radio through that company too, which is kind of a whole nother unexpected turn to how my job turned out with that company. But did that for about 4 years or so. And again, really liked it, but I was kind of hitting my growth ceiling with that company. It was a pretty small company. And I was thinking about my next steps, where I wanted to go in terms of my career and looking for a new company or maybe even a new city. And just things weren't coming as easily as I had thought. So I kind of went back to this initial thought when I went into college about, well, maybe something medicine or science related is still in the cards. And after thinking about it quite a bit, I realized that I could do science and do medicine as a career. I could also continue in my business aspirations, and my goal always was to have my own business, whatever it was going to be. And I really still like that aspect of what I was doing back in my old career. But then also I could work with animals because I'd always had a connection to animals, and I guess I took it for granted. I didn't really make a huge connection with it that I had this big connection. And I decided that you could do all three of those things in veterinary medicine. So that's more or less how I came to that conclusion, is that I could combine all of these interests that I had into one career. Now, quitting my job and forgoing that salary and having to go back to school for a year and a half to get all my prereqs done was another big kind of fear that I had to overcome and just do the grind. But I decided that the risk was worth the reward, and I resigned from my job, went back to I guess undergraduate studies for a year and a half again to do those prereqs, like I said, and then applied to vet school and was fortunate enough to be accepted and decided to go to Mizzou. So now I'm here and have never looked back.
So was Mizzou one of like your main choices when it came to looking at vet schools?
It was. It's my in-state school. So cost was certainly a factor there. It was going to be less than half the cost if I were to go to an out-of-state school, which, you know, if you're in vet school in the U.S., you definitely know that that is one of the harsh realities of vet school, is the cost. And then being close to home was also really important to me. But then the other cool thing about Mizzou, which I think is becoming a little bit more commonplace than some of the other schools in the U.S., I'm not sure how it works in the U.K., but is our curriculum is split up into 2 years of didactic studying and 2 years of clinical studying, whereas I think the majority of schools do 3 years of didactics and 1 year of clinical study. So I knew that I am not as strong of a student or not as strong as a learner with just book studying and exams. I do a lot better hands-on and actually seeing cases and putting the knowledge to work. So that was one of the big draws to Mizzou, is that you had almost double the amount of time in the hospital here to actually practice what we've been learning. So there was another couple schools that I got into that I was really considering, but again, when it came down to cost, distance from home, and how much time in clinics you got, it turned out to be a relatively easy decision to come to Mizzou.
And it's one that you wouldn't look back on, right?
Correct. No, I think our career has a lot of challenges, but it's so much fun and really great to help these animals and help their owners. And I have never taken a second guess to the decision to change my career. So I really feel like I've made the right decision.
And going with your business degree, and like you said that you always saw yourself owning your own business, no matter what that ended up being, would that mean that going into veterinary medicine, you're kind of leaning down the track of maybe owning your own practice someday?
Exactly. That's one of my big goals, not only becoming a veterinarian, but within a few years of being out of vet school, is to have my own practice. I'm not sure if that's going to mean buying a practice from a vet that's retiring or just wanting to get rid of their practice, or starting one of my own. We'll kind of see what happens with that. But my goal is that within, I don't know, 1 to 4 years after I graduate, I'll go into business for myself. I just like that leadership aspect and kind of having the freedom to lead a team and to practice the way I want to is really appealing. I also think that in small animal medicine, salary is one of the big, again, not to get too deep into this right now, but salary is a big challenge that we have, is that we are relatively underpaid for how much debt we have and how much we do in terms of our skills. But as a practice owner in small animal medicine, the potential for your income to be as high as it possibly can be is a lot better than just being an associate. So that's another one of the big things that has drawn me to ownership. Not that money is everything, but money is certainly important. So we'll see what happens.
you know, we do kind of, going into vet med, you kind of know that your pay as you go out of vet school isn't going to be all that great. So kind of having that in the back of your mind already, I think that's kind of a good step out the door. So do you have any models, like people that you've looked up to or mentors that have been a good model of a business leader or a business owner?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few. Some of the big personalities that we see on social media have certainly, played a role in kind of my thought processes and where I've gone throughout vet school. Like Dr. Andy Work has been really cool, even though he doesn't own a practice. He's definitely a leader with his team and in the online community. There are a lot of other people that I've met at conferences that are not as present on social media, but have really kind of taken me under their wing and shown me all the great things about ownership and kind of taught me a few things on the way. But yeah, I think, I mean, this kind of goes into the whole networking topic, but the more and more people you can talk to, whether it's just making a connection on social media or going to conferences, people love to help out students and they get a rush from that. So, it's definitely nerve-wracking to approach them to just say, hey, I'm a student, I'm looking to get some advice on something. But I think that we're all pleasantly surprised at how willing they are to really help us out and give us their advice.
That is something I've been finding over and over again, even just with podcasting. You're like, oh, yeah. I have this idea, I have this topic, and who would be a really good person to go into more like detail about that? And just having the accessibility of those people like on social media or at conferences and be like, hey, do you want to talk about this? And everyone is always so willing to share their viewpoint or just their experience on it with vet students. And that kind of blows me away. And I think that's something as you just mentioned, you find as well. So again, talking about mentors and just finding people, you had gone to the Uncharted Veterinary Conference earlier. Was it this year?
It was this past spring.
Andrew Rourke, right?
Correct. Yep.
So what were some of the things that came out of that? Or what was, for the people who don't know, maybe from the UK, what was Uncharted?
Yeah, so Uncharted Veterinary Conference is a new conference, relatively new conference. It will be in its third year, I believe, this coming spring. It was started by Dr. Andy Rourke and some of his colleagues, and they hold it in North Carolina every year. Now they've got actually a mini conference that I think is happening relatively soon here. But it's a very small conference, very intimate setting. I think there were only maybe a couple hundred people there at the lab when I went in the spring. And it's all these people with an entrepreneurial spirit, if you want to look at it that way, business owners. And it's really all about marketing and branding as a veterinarian. So there's not a whole lot of CE in terms of this is how you treat pancreatitis and here are the new things in surgery. But it's all about how do you tell a story with your brand and how do you make a brand and how can we better listen to our clients and provide better services? So it's a really, really neat way to kind of get ideas generated and get, really energized about the industry. That's really the biggest take home that I walked away with, was that you just leave there feeling so pumped up about going back to work or going back to wherever you are and implementing these cool ideas into your practice. And the other cool thing about the people that were there is that it's not only veterinarians, it was practice managers and technicians and assistants too that just wanted to learn a little bit more about marketing and the business side of veterinary medicine, which I think you and I both know, and I know a lot of people out there know as well, is that business and marketing is not one of our strong suits, generally speaking, in the veterinary profession, which is not totally unexpected, but definitely an area that we can grow in, and I think we've got a lot of potential too.
So as a veterinary student then, was there a lot to do with maybe like the social media side of things? And then was there anything to really do with podcasting when you went to Uncharted, or what did you walk away from with that kind of podcasting mindset?
Yeah, that's a good question. I didn't go mainly for the podcasting aspect specifically. I knew that I was going to take away some tools that would help with that. But for me going there, it mainly had to do with kind of adding tools to my toolkit, which is kind of a silly way to think about it, but to adding these tools to ways that I can make more of an influence when I'm done with vet school. I really want to try to figure out a way to make more of a connection with pet owners. Because one of the coolest things that I've found about vet med and has really become one of my driving passions, if you want to call it that, with becoming a veterinarian is the human animal bond. And, I mean, just the relationships that we have with our small animals specifically, and the companionship is really neat and really special. And I think that as veterinarians and as medical providers for these animals, this is one of the big ways that we can really get involved with these clients' lives. And by doing so is going to really help us out in helping these animals. If you look at how much money is spent per year, on pets, you'll notice that a very small chunk of the pie is actually for medical care, which is not necessarily bad, but, people are spending so much money on their animals. If you look at food and toys and treats and grooming, and if you look at Halloween costumes alone, that's probably the majority of the money people are spending these days. There's a lot of people out there that are looking for advice and for influence with their pets and their animals. And unfortunately, people are going to some relatively unreliable sources on the internet these days, but veterinarians can be that answer too. So, that's a lot of what I took away from the conference, was just ways to be a better, influencer, be a better and more effective person when it comes to the human animal bond.
And bringing up the whole accurate advice, topic, I might be getting ahead of myself, but looking at podcasting, I've already seen a couple good podcasts run by veterinarians in which their whole ethos is to provide accurate information to pet owners in a way that they can understand. But as podcasting moves forward and as social media moves forward, how do you think veterinarians can kind of protect that niche to continue to provide accurate information without these outliers coming into the game and almost acting like professionals, but not having right. accurate information?
Yeah, it's so tough because we always kind of make jokes about our clients going to the internet as their first stop for information, but like, do you blame them? Like, that's where we go for our first bit of information too. The thing that we have to train our clients about is what is a reliable source and can they spot the stuff that's not so reliable. So I think the biggest thing that we can do is just to create more content. I know that we don't have a lot of free time, obviously, but the more that we can blog or make YouTube videos or podcast or whatever it's going to be, if we can just make more of a presence online, I think that's going to help us out tremendously, because that's the biggest reason that these people that may not have as much of a background in veterinary medicine are actually making recommendations or giving their opinions about it is because they're creating more content. It's more out there. They're higher on the Google list. But we could do that too. I mean, we just need to make more content. So however that's going to be, find a medium that you like. And I know with a lot of just associate veterinarians, some people really like to make short little videos to put on Facebook and really pump up their practice page on Facebook and hit their clients that way. But that's just one example of many that can help us get good information out there. Since we're the trained individuals and we don't need to badmouth anybody, but we just need to make sure it's known that this is accurate information. We're trained in this. We go to school for 8 years to be able to treat these animals, and give them the reason to listen to us.
And looking at just how, like, we need to protect the accurate information that we're providing, either, like you said, just putting out more content or maybe just branding it in a certain way. But then equally, how would you recommend as vet students or veterinarians that we go about protecting ourselves and protecting the fact that it's a DVM and we can't diagnose or treat your animal over a podcast? So how would we make that clearer to our listeners?
Yeah, that's another good one, because there's definitely a lot of sticky situations we could get in and get ourselves into trouble. So it's really important, even as a veterinary student, and of course as a veterinarian too, that if you're giving specific information for a patient or giving an opinion, it's really important that they understand that you can't really do that without actually seeing the patient. Now, I know a lot of things are going to change possibly in the future, and I'm not going to get too deep into the weeds on this one, but things like telemedicine and video medicine, all of that, which I know that I've heard some stories, I haven't tried this myself, but I think that in human insurance providers, you can go onto their website and video chat with a physician and tell them your signs and symptoms and yada, yada, yada. And then they'll prescribe you a medicine, you go pick it up, whatever. That's a little, you know, different way of thinking. And I don't think that exists yet in vet med, but
No, and I don't like that idea happening in vet med, yeah, personally.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little tough, specifically with us, is that our patients can't talk to us, right? So we need to put our hands on the patient and elicit a response from them. We need to use the way that we communicate with them, the way that we're trained to communicate with them, and listen to what they are quote unquote saying to us to diagnose. So I'm sure that the day you got into vet school, and for a lot of you out there, the day you started vet school, you got calls from all your friends and relatives asking for advice on their animals. And while you can kind of share what you know, it's always definitely go check with your primary veterinarian, because they need to diagnose and treat your animal. I can tell you what I know and some knowledge about a disease or whatever it's going to be, but it's not ethically, morally, and even legally right for me, certainly as a vet student, to diagnose and prescribe, but it's definitely not morally and ethically right and legally right to do any of that without having a client-patient veterinarian relationship.
Yeah, it's like every single message I get, it's like, here's what I know, here's what might happen, but here's a little disclaimer at the end. I am a vet student. I cannot legally treat your animal, blah, 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 go see your vet.
Right.
One of my friends, actually, she gets that disclaimer almost every time she texts me about one of her animals. And now it's just a running joke between us. But it is something that we need to think about as vet students, as veterinarians. And then just the fact that even if we talk about some like minor treatments or something that you can do at home, like those are something that I'm like, oh, you could get into some really sticky situations with some of those. Because then you have a client who comes in and says, well, I heard on the podcast you can to make your dog vomit, well, kind of thing.
Right.
I've heard those kind of things coming up. But if you're listening and you have an animal and you have a question, if nothing else, it's good to just call your veterinarian so that it'll be put on your record that you called that, your dog was having digestive issues at such and such a date. So if something does happen a couple weeks down the line, they can look back in the history and they'll say, hey, something was funny on this date and you called it in. So if nothing else, always call your vet. Just always call your vet.
And the good thing about us is that we're not like, for you and me who are podcasting and for people out there that are posting stuff online or blogs or doing anything like that, most of the time we're not saying, okay, Mr. Smith who owns Fluffy, you need to do this and this for your animal. That would be practicing veterinary medicine, but we're not really doing that. We're saying if your dog gets into chocolate and it's within a couple hours of them eating it, sometimes what we would do in an emergency setting is administer some type of drug to induce emesis or vomiting. And these are the drugs we sometimes use. And if you're at home and you can't get to a hospital, we can sometimes use hydrogen peroxide and blah, blah, blah. That's not really practicing medicine. You're not giving that as a specific instruction. So you're kind of covering yourself there. So just be careful with how you approach these things. Like, don't tell them to go do something if you're not licensed to actually do it. So I've always had the good rule of thumb that if it seems kind of fishy, or if you're even a little bit uncomfortable with doing something in that regard, just don't do it. If you have to second guess yourself, it's probably a bad idea. And just say, listen, I think this is over my head. You need to go talk to a vet.
I think that is a very good amount of advice there. So before we get too deep into that, podcasting, where did it start? Why do we use podcasting? How can we use it in veterinary medicine? So if you want to start a little bit on that, I guess we'll ask the question, what is podcasting, since that's what we're doing right now?
Sure. So podcasting is a relatively new medium for information. I'd say in the past, 10, 15 years that it really started, and really in the past, I would say 5 years, it got really popular. Podcasting, in my opinion, is just it's like radio. It is audio based information that is put out on the internet. And you don't need to have a subscription to this. You don't have to have a radio to actually get it. You just need internet, and a computer or something to play the audio on. So I look at it, at least with what I'm doing, I think what a lot of podcasters are doing is like, it's a way of blogging or sharing stories and sharing information, but using audio as the medium versus using written word, like actual blogging or videos, things like that. So a lot of people listen to podcasts for entertainment. There are a lot of like crime shows. Like I know Serial was one of the big things that got podcasting a lot of notoriety. And then a lot of actors and TV personalities will have podcasts just to have like talk shows on there. But then there are podcasts that are informational, kind of like a lot of the continuing education podcasts that are out there in the veterinary community. Also kind of like, you know, like do it yourself things, and just really, there's no limit to what you could do on podcasting. I'm just mentioning some of the popular things that people are talking about. I started my podcast back in my second year of vet school because, again, I had this weird background with my own career, and I learned how to record audio and edit it down and make it sound professional. So I knew I had that skill. And I had recently gotten into listening to podcasts, veterinary ones specifically, and I recognized that there weren't a whole lot of podcasts for veterinarians, and the ones that did exist were not the highest quality, not in terms of content, but just in terms of audio quality. And furthermore, there at the time literally were not any that were specifically geared towards veterinary students. So I figured that, you know, I don't have a lot of free time, but I could use some type of extracurricular activity. And I still enjoyed doing audio stuff and recording and making content like that. So I kind of went for it and didn't really have any expectations for where it would go. But it's been pretty well received. And like you mentioned in the beginning, that veterinarians and other people in the community, when I approached them to be guests on the podcast, they were more than willing and really excited to do it. So it's become a really cool way to spread information about vet school and to share stories and experiences and help vet students just get through vet school and make the best of it. Where it will go, I'm not really sure, but podcasting in general is, especially for veterinarians and for anyone in veterinary medicine, it's just a really good way to stay connected, not only to hear other people's stories and kind of build camaraderie with the things that we're seeing and the struggles that we face, but it's also a really good way to learn a little bit more about what you're doing. I'll use one example, which was one of the original veterinary podcasts, which is Vet Girl, which is a huge continuing education organization that has just really blown up in the past few years in terms of the reach that they have and the content that they put out. But they've got some really good podcasts, and they have guests on to talk about a lot of different topics in emergency medicine and just any really topic in veterinary medicine in general, just so we can get some more information and stay up to date on what's going on. So I know that's a long answer, but I think podcasting is a really cool way just to get information. You can listen to them in the car or working out. You don't have to be sitting at a computer and listening reading a long article or sit and listen to watch a video, for example. You can't really do that while you're driving. But podcasting, you can pretty much do almost anywhere.
I think that's a really good answer. And so we'll start to kind of go into that layer by layer and looking at, so podcasting, the fact that it's auditory. If you look at the different senses that we have our sound, we can sight, taste, and touch. And obviously we're not eating anything. We're not physically using our hands for anything. I mean, that's not a really, well, I guess let's back up a little bit. So let's look at like vet school in general. And when you walk in, you learn things by sitting and listening in your didactic lectures. And you're looking at the screen or you're watching videos. And then you can go into the dissection room where you're actually physically touching things. You shouldn't be tasting things, but sometimes you inadvertently do. Yuck. But it happens. Yep. But then in life in general, that's the same principles apply. So people are accessing information or just getting information mostly in the recent days by either we were reading books, we were listening to people tell stories, and then in more recent times, we've been watching videos, like YouTube has become big, having videos on Facebook, on Instagram. That has been a lot of how we gain our information.
Right.
And I feel like more recently with, again, maybe it's just our fast-paced lifestyles that we have, but we're looking for new ways of getting information. And auditory is like, that's the hot ticket right now because it's the wide open expanse that no one has really seemed to touch until recently. I mean, we've had radio shows for the longest time. I mean, you sit in your car, you turn on the radio, and you knew at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, that's when Sally and Steve would be on the radio and you could listen to everything that happened during the day. So it was something that was reliable. You knew you were going to get semi-accurate information from them every day at that time.
Right.
So I feel like that's where we're following the same pattern with podcasting because you look at people, they have a upload schedule. Like for me, it's every 2 weeks on a Friday. You have your own, what's your schedule?
My goal has been to do every 2 weeks and yeah, upload it on a Friday or Saturday. Sometimes with school scheduling, that can be a little bit tough, but I'll try to, 2 weeks is my goal. Sometimes it's not, doesn't work. Sometimes it's 3 or 4 weeks, but 2 weeks is ideal.
Yeah. So we're sticking with a similar kind of repertoire, if you will, as to what we're used to when it comes to listening to information. And like you said, 10 to 15 years ago, that's when podcasting really started to become available because that's when we kind of had the internet come alive.
Right.
That's something that's happened. Is it crazy to think that that's something that happened within our lifetimes? Like our parents, they didn't grow up with all this technology and all this kind of access to information.
Right.
And now we have, and then we had the creation of the iPod so that we could now have portable audio. And from there, of course, you have the term podcasting coming from the fact that you could use an iPod and Apple Corporation, Steve Jobs, owning the game. There he is. But podcasting right now, it is the hot ticket. It is the one. It's super underpriced in means of accessibility. So like if you want to put your name on a billboard, that's going to cost like what, $7,000 a month, maybe? You want to put your name on a podcast? All you need is the phone you have in your hands or the laptop you have in front of you and an internet access. There are so many places, like you can get Audacity or GarageBand for free. And then all you need is a microphone, like the one, you can use the one on your computer, you can use the one on your phone, and you're right there. You can sit down, you can record your voice, you can hit upload, and bing, bang, boom, it's out in the world. So the fact that podcasting is so accessible, I think is another reason that it's become so popular. Would you agree?
I would agree. Yeah, it's so easy to do. Now, obviously, we can get into a whole topic about sound quality and editing and all of that. But if you just want to start creating content, like you said, all you need is a microphone and a computer, and that's it. Now, obviously, there's going to be some difficult ways on not difficult, but some things to figure out with how to get your podcast onto these different hosting websites. But just to create the content, it doesn't take much. It's as easy as writing a blog.
Yeah. And if you want to start upping your quality, like if you have the drive to want to do that, you will find the means to do that.
Right.
It's the same thing with anything. If you want to make your blog better, you want to have to pay for a better website design, you'll find the means to do that. And the same thing happens in podcasting. So just the fact that you can start with almost nothing, and within a month, you could easily go from menial quality to doing pretty good.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't need to be in a professional studio to do any of this stuff. I mean, I do this out of my house. I think you do it out of your flat. And yeah, it does not take much.
And it's just the beauty of it all. So looking at veterinary medicine then, how do you think vet students and veterinarians are using podcasting?
I think that we use it, I think mainly to stay connected and just to kind of get an additional opinion about what's going on in our crazy lives. I know a lot of my friends that listen to podcasts, and just from people that I've have told me that listen to my own podcast, a lot of them will listen to it on long drives home or when they're working out, just to kind of take a bit of a chill from the daily grind, but still learning a little bit about what's going on in vet med. And I try to keep my topics, specifically talking about my podcast, being nothing seriously heavy or nothing too like academic related about what we're learning, but more about our experiences. And I think that's really what it's all about, because if you look at the main goal of social media, and like blogging and vlogging and podcasting, it's all about connecting with each other about experiences, and I think that's the key to all of that stuff, especially social media, if you want to use that as an example. But it really can be used to think about podcasting too, is that we build these connections with each other based on the experiences that people are sharing. Like if you look at all the your favorite people you follow on Instagram, it's your fascination with seeing what they're doing and what they're experiencing so that you can play a little bit of a role in that too, and kind of experience what they're experiencing. So I think that's the biggest driving factor behind what we do. And I think what a lot of people are looking for, even though we may not really make that connection at first.
Yeah, it's storytelling. We're fascinated by how people can tell stories, whether it's in video, written down, or in podcasting. It's auditory storytelling, one of the original ways that stories were shared. But now you have the ability to save it, edit and save it, and then listen to it over and over again, or just listen to it anywhere.
Right.
So as vet students, I feel like we're in a unique position because our lives or our stories are changing so rapidly within the next 5 years. If you think about when both of us started our podcast, you started at your second year of vet school. I started mine second year of vet school, which is technically my third year of vet school. UK system, yeah. Mixed up.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, like, in the next 5 years, like, that's when you're planning to be owning a practice,
right?
Theoretically. I will have just gotten out of vet school, been in practice for a year or two. And so just the fact that we'll be switching from the stories of being vet students to telling the story of being in transitioning into veterinary practice. And how do you think that'll change? Do you think that'll change how you present your podcast, or at least to who you are providing the podcast to? Like, who do you think your audience will be?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've been thinking a lot about that in the past month, really, especially because graduation is only, I don't know, 8 months down the road, which is pretty crazy to think about. And I didn't know really what was going to happen with my podcast, whether or not I was going to just stop doing it or hand it off to somebody else to continue it, or me myself continuing to do it. My idea kind of changes by the day, but I think right now, since it seems like vet students and a lot of pre-vet students actually really get a lot back from the topics that I talk about, it may be worth continuing to do it while I'm out in practice, because I don't think that it's really me that's sharing a lot of these experiences on my podcast. I'm really more or less the interviewer, the connection between the guest that I have on and the topic that we're talking about. So as long as I can continue to get some guests to talk about topics that are really really hot topics in vet school, I think it could still be influential. I had initially thought that I wanted to continue podcasting when I was in practice, but do a podcast for clients, just kind of going back to what we talked about, creating content for pet owners and having a podcast as a veterinarian sharing information about different things that people would want to know. But I'm not sure if that's really in the cards, because I've just had a lot more success than I thought I was going to have with the Vet School Unleashed podcast. So we'll see what happens. There's definitely a need and a want for podcasting for veterinary students and for veterinary school. So we may keep it going while it's still going.
Well, I hope you keep it going, because I've definitely been enjoying listening to each episode.
Good. Thank you.
So in the next 10 years, then, beyond our own podcasts, where do you think veterinary medicine is going to go in the podcasting realm? Because like right now we have kind of like different categories of podcasting in general. And then the same thing holds true in veterinary medicine, where we have like lifestyle, continuing education, veterinary journals, even vet schools have their own podcasts. People are just telling their stories. There's client education, emergency and critical care. Like the list goes on and on of these different like genres or categories, if you will, of veterinary medicine. But do you think people will start to hone down, and do you think maybe we'll start having monopolies on certain areas of podcasting in veterinary medicine?
That's a good question. I at first was wondering if podcasting was going to be a fad. Kind of, I'm trying to think of an analogy of something that was a fad, but
Snapchat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that would be, it'd be really hot for a couple of years and then just eventually die out. But I think we're past that point. I mean, it's been around for probably half a dozen years that's been really popular. I don't think it's going anywhere. How it changes in terms of the content we put out in terms of veterinary medicine, I don't know. I would have thought that there would have been a really popular podcast by now about veterinary practice life, kind of the way we're seeing it on TV, which has become a little bit less popular, but a few years ago it was super popular with like Dr. Pohl, and now we've got all these exotic,
the UK,
all these different vet shows on TV. I would have thought that we would have seen something similar in the podcasting world, but I don't think there's been anything nearly as big like that yet. So it's really hard to say where it's going to go. I think CE is definitely going to continue to be a really big player, but I think if there's a way that we can find a way to make veterinary medicine like entertainment, that would be kind of cool to do. Kind of like I mentioned, the veterinary shows, whether out in practice, and then there were even vet school shows for a while. So I think if there's a way to make them more entertaining, kind of like a not so much educational but entertainment geared, that I could see that happening potentially.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, how do we diversify? I feel like that's one thing that veterinary medicine has kind of struggled when it comes to anything social media wise, or just how to get out into the rest of the world. We're not very good at diversifying or finding our own footpath. You think of like insurance, or just how we do things in general. We follow the medical sphere. Everything we do, they've already done. So what are things that veterinary medicine can do, maybe in social media or just just podcasting right now, that can really help us diversify and make our own name for the game? And I honestly think one of the ways, now that you really mention it, is doing reality podcasting. I don't know if that's what they would call it, instead of reality TV, as you were mentioning.
Right.
But what would that, I don't know. Do you want to go into that? What would it look like to do reality podcasting? Because you're not able to show them, like, this is our client and this is our animal and this is the drama that happened rushing to the ER. But how do you become a really good storyteller? I don't know. Yeah, what your idea is.
That's what I was going to say about, it's all going to be all about storytelling. That if you can find a way to share a story and make it really intriguing, like a good emergency case would be a really good story to tell. If you could eloquently talk about what the emergency was, and then what happened when they got to the hospital, and what the injuries were, or whatever it was going to be. And you can go through the diagnostics that you did and talk about the differentials, and, but not talk about it in like medical jargon, but talk about it in real world, talk. So, it's really going to come down to how well can you form a story. I think it would probably take a lot of like writing and editing and figuring out how it's going to work. So it may take a little bit more work than you would think initially, but, it could be a really cool way, cool way to do it. And I think if I'm trying to think, like if you were to just watch one of the vet shows, the vet reality shows, but not watch, just listen to it, would it still have the same effect? Answer is probably not, but there's probably a way that you could make it equally entertaining.
Kind of like Grey's Anatomy, but in a podcast.
Exactly.
And just figuring out that like we have like really good books written in that way, and that's an audiobook, but it has a different feel than if someone is like literally sitting down in front of you telling you the story, and all they have is their voice to tell the story. You don't even have like facial or hand expressions to make right. the story come across. So I think the person that can make that happen, they will have hit the jackpot when it comes to podcasting of veterinary medicine, because then you have not only hit your audience within veterinary medicine, but you're getting your clients, you're getting the people who don't even know anything about medicine or don't even care to know anything about medicine, but you're grabbing their attention and bringing them into the veterinary medicine world. So I think now that you mentioned that, that might just become something.
Yeah. I mean, people love to talk about their animals. Dogs and cats especially have become such a intertwined part of our lives. You know, the cool story that people always talk about is that 50 years ago, these dogs did not live inside the house. They were outdoor dogs, and they were still the family pet, but they'd be eating whatever it was, Old Roy, and they'd get their food out in a metal tray in the backyard. And now look at today, they're literally sleeping under the sheets with us. So it's crazy how far we've come in terms of how much we're intertwining these animals into our lives, and people like to listen to it and hear about other people's experiences. I mean, that's why we're seeing so much success with the reality shows on TV. So I think like the two main topics or the two main genres that I think would really hit people effectively with like a podcast would be sharing sad stories, unfortunately, like end of life care or a terrible accident or something like that. But then also funny things too. I think comedy and tragedy are both really good ways to connect with people, at least with storytelling. So like the thing that comes to mind with a funny story would be something really dumb that a dog ate or got hold of. Like when I was on my emergency service here at Mizzou, I had a really funny case, and luckily it ended well for the dog. But this man brought in his little, I think it was like a Yorkie poo or one of those little frou-frou poodle dogs that had eaten something, and he knew what the dog ate, but he was pretty embarrassed to tell us what the dog ate. And we could see that something was in the stomach, and the dog had just eaten it. We luckily made the dog vomit whatever it was up, and what the dog vomited was a tampon, and the owner was just horrified and just totally embarrassed. And but that's just the funny stories that we have, and luckily they end happy. But it's just a really good way to connect with people.
Yeah, it just comes down to how do you tell the story that right. has just enough details and just enough to really keep their attention. And I feel like we could go on and on about this, but while we're on the topic, if any of you are a screenwriter or have any ideas on this, contact Seth or I think we have a yeah. new hit for you.
Please, yes.
So I feel like that kind of covers all of this podcasting. So if anybody is a vet student or maybe they're a veterinarian and they want to get started in podcasting, what would you recommend for them?
First, I think you got to get your ideas like written down on paper or written down somewhere. You need to have a vision for it and a plan. Because there's, even though it's relatively easy to start creating content, there are some steps that can be a little bit annoying, if you will, to get into it fully. So, but yeah, first, you know, what's the goal of the podcast? How are you going to share the stories? Will you have guests? And then the technical things, how are you going to record it? And are you going to, what kind of microphones are you going to use? Is it going to be more high tech or just kind of organic? And then you got to look into podcast hosting, which gets into the really nerdy and unfun stuff, but you got to have a place that can host your audio. And then are you going to have a website and you can go as deep as you want into this, but yeah, again, back to my first point, just put some ideas on paper and then talk to other people that do podcasts. So I love talking to other people about starting podcasts. And I'm sure that you are equally as invigorated talking about podcasting and how to start. So people that are into podcasting really like to talk and help other people get it started. So use other people, lean on them and learn from what they've done well and mistakes that they've made, and make it happen.
I love that quote. People who are into podcasting like to talk.
Yeah, that is true.
No, yeah, I totally echo all of that. There's so many things that I am learning because I did not have a degree in any of this. You thankfully had your music and business to kind of learn a background of like, what is equalization and what is compression and how do you use all this technology and what is kind of what works, what doesn't work. And I've been learning kind of on the fly. And thankfully, I have people like yourself and others who have been able to give me little tips and tricks here and there. But I do want to give a shout out for Anchor, which not sponsored at all, though Anchor, if you want to help me out here anyway, but Anchor.fm is the podcasting hosting system that I have been using. I don't record any of my episodes on Anchor. I actually did record one episode with them, and that was back with the vet student, Tristan Moore. Couple of episodes back if you want to listen to that. But other than that, they're fantastic because it's a free service you can use. You can add background music. You can add these transitions, everything in it. That's where you can put your episodes up. And then from there, it'll be disseminated to different podcasting hosting sites like Spotify and Breaker and iTunes. So if you want to get started in podcasting, that's where I would direct you first if you're on a very tight budget. But that's about all the addition to the information that I have. So I think with that, we'll kind of wrap up that little section. But I want to hand the floor completely over to you. How can people get connected with you, find out more about your podcast, and what do you have coming up with the transition into practice?
Sure. So yeah, I love connecting with people online. And I'm trying to be a little bit more active on Instagram. So definitely follow me on Instagram my handle's at Seth the Almost Vet. I try to post some stuff not only about just my normal life but life in vet school, and then obviously post stuff about my podcast too. And then yeah, find me wherever you get your podcasts. My podcast is called Vet School Unleashed, Dissecting the DVM. And yeah, we put out a new podcast every couple weeks or so and try to hit some of the hot topics going on in veterinary medicine and vet school specifically. And I always try to have a guest on there to kind of lend their expertise. So it's not just me talking, it's merely me just asking questions. And then you can also get in touch with me via email at seth@vetschoolunleashed.com. Again, I just like talking to people and hearing other people's experiences and sharing ideas because that's it's all about meeting people and connecting and networking. And I think that's going to be really gets us far in our career and makes it that much better. So yeah, definitely going to keep doing what I'm doing while I'm in school. And then sooner or later, I'll be out in half a year or so. And we'll continue hopefully sharing my story when I'm out in practice, assuming I pass my boards.
I think that'll happen. So are you going to have to change your Instagram handle to Seth the Vet? Or are you going to, what are you going to do there?
You know, that's a funny question because actually, yeah, here's another piece of advice. If you have a handle or a social media name or brand, whatever it is that you want to have when you're out in practice, like Dr. John Doe or whatever it's going to be, like something that you want to have that you don't really feel comfortable calling yourself yet, like doctor, register for it now. So if it's a website, if it's an Instagram name, if it's a Facebook page, just create it now. And you don't have to publicize it. Just make sure that it is registered to you, because my funny story, which is not so funny right now, cause I'm trying to change it. There is a Seth the Vet out there that just started his Instagram account a few months ago. And I had always been told, like, register these names now, get your website, get your Instagram handles tied up to you so that no one else gets it. Well, I, of course, dropped the ball on that. Now someone else has that name. So I'm trying to figure out or maybe coerce him into giving up the name, or maybe I'll just have to find something else. But no, it's a funny but sad reality of just one of the ways I messed up.
So guys, if you have any ideas for what Seth should call his new social media handles, definitely go drop that on his Instagram as Seth the Almost Vet before he changes it, so that maybe he has some ideas that can help him out.
Yes, I need some ideas.
But so you're graduating pretty shortly, but before you graduate, you have to take the NAVLE. And I don't want to steal your thunder from your most recent Vet School Unleashed podcast episode, but what are your thoughts approaching the NAVLE and approaching the end of the year?
I'm a bit scared right now. I take the NAVLE in a little less than 2 months from now, which actually maybe almost 2 months exactly. So it's crunch time. So I'm not familiar at all with the board exams that you all take in the UK or in any of the other countries, other than the US and Canada, but we take the NAVLE, the North American Veterinary Licensing Examination, which is just our national board exam. Goes over all of the species we learn about in vet school and all the different areas of medicine. So it's pretty much like the most important exam of your vet school career. So a little bit nerve-wracking. It's about a 5 or 6 hour exam that we take. So I'm in the midst of studying and cramming as much information as I can right now in all of the free time that we have outside of vet school. And we'll see what happens. But luckily, most vet students across the U.S. and Canada pass the exam on their first or second try. Very fortunate that at Mizzou we have almost 100% pass rate on the first try. So that's giving me a little bit of ease. But I'll just keep studying hard and keep praying. But it's only one day out of my life, so. Once it's over, and that'll be it. Then I'll be a vet.
Wow, very true, very true. Though you get it out of it what you put into it, and if you're putting into your studying what you're doing for the podcast, I think you should be just fine.
Cool, appreciate it. That makes me feel better.
Well, hopefully, yeah. Over here in the UK, we just have our final exams. That would be in the January of your final year, and then if you want to practice in North America or Canada, you have to take the NAVLE. So I am gearing up for studying for my NAVLE, which will be in a little over a year. And I'm a little over a year away, and I'm already terrified. So I can't imagine what you're in right now. I guess
that's okay. I mean, I'll give a little bit of a teaser for this last episode I did about the NAVLE, which is just all about the nuts and bolts about the test, like it's multiple choice, and these are the types of questions you're going to see. But really, one of the best pieces of advice and like comforting advice that I got from a clinician was that it's supposed to be able to be passed by like the bottom of the class, which I know we're all like everyone in vet school is pretty darn smart, because you got to be very smart and talented to get into vet school. But there's got to be a bottom of the class, and the NAVLE is designed to be passed by those people too. I mean, it's supposed to be a test just for entry-level veterinarians. So in theory, your vet school should be preparing you more than adequately to pass the exam. It's just in theory, and when thinking about it, just scarier then you know what. So, but we all get through it. Every veterinarian, at least here in North America, has gotten through it. So, if they can, then we can.
Well, that is very inspiring right there. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Well, I guess with that, we'll wrap it up right here. So yeah, guys, I definitely encourage you to go check out Seth's podcast, Vet School Unleashed. I will have it linked below and you can find it on any major podcasting platforms. Go say hi to him on Instagram. He's a great guy and he puts some really good posts up every now and then. And
yeah,
again,
thank
if,
you.
Yeah, if you want to hear more about this podcast, you kind of know where to find it considering you're already listening to it. But again, you can find it on any major podcasting platform, and also go say hi to me on Instagram as well at That Vet Life. I love hearing from you guys, love hearing from the information that you've gotten from the podcast and any ideas that you have. And I guess so with that, I'll say goodbye from the United Kingdom. Thank you so much, Seth, for joining me today.
No, well, thank you very much. It's really been an honor to be on, and thank you for listening to my podcast and for starting your own. So, yeah, if you're out there, want to do a podcast, join the fun, because the more the merrier. But yeah, thank you very much for everything you're doing. You got a great thing you got going over there, and good luck in school. Well, we're all in it together. So, but yeah, thanks again.
Cool. All right, guys, till next time. See ya.